It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important story.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Happy Monday to each and every one of you. Thank you for listening. You each are treasured and valued. You have a purpose. Live with intention and take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. And I'd love to say thank you to this great team that I get to work with, and that's producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, all the folks here at Crawford Broadcasting. Happy Monday. We have work to do. Producer Steve.
Oh, my goodness. Our news package from Patty is just jammed. We need a five-hour show to cover it all.
Yeah, we are thinking about somehow we're doing some changes regarding upgrading website and all kinds of things like that. And I'd really like to get a spot on the website and call it Patty's Picks or something like that, because we don't get through everything. And that way people could actually access all of the research that she is doing. I think that that's something that we really need to get done, Steve.
I'm dating myself here, but you know what a shoehorn is.
I do.
And I think 7 o'clock gets here, or you know, whatever time you're listening to the show, it gets here. And I look at the package that Patty has sent, and it's like, maybe we got into 10% of that.
I know. And it's all just so important, because you really will be well informed. So we're going to go to work on that, Steve. We're going to get something like that. I'll figure that out.
Very good news.
Good news on that. Be sure and check out the website. That's Kim Munson, MUNSON.com. Our recaps of our shows and the podcast are there. You just click on the picture, and that will bring that up. And sign up for our weekly email newsletter as well. And I'm not saying email me right now, because I did not get through everything this weekend. you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com. Just give me a little grace on this. We got a lot of stuff going on, and I just don't get through all that right now.
We're going to chain you to your dining room table and take away your car keys.
I know it. I know it. So anyway, yes, you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And we'd appreciate it. And thank you to all of you that are contributing to the work that we're doing. As you know, this is totally independent, and we want to keep it that way. So help keep our independent voice on the air. We really appreciate that. It's been quite a week. Well, let's jump into our quote for the day. I cannot wait until segments 3 and 4. We will be talking with Dr. Alan Gelzo, and you know him. He's a Princeton professor. We'll talk about George Washington and Abraham Lincoln. Since today is President's Day, I thought that would be very appropriate, Steve.
Well, I'm cheating. I'm looking ahead here at the quote, because I know they're good. They're bound to be good, because mm-hmm. your reputation is stellar in that department. And you know, go ahead. Let's get there.
Okay. This is a George Washington quote. This was a letter to James Madison in 1785. And as we know, George Washington was born on February 22nd, and I took the year out there. I can't remember what year. He was about, 67, 68 when he died, and he died in 1799. Anyway, he said this: "We are either a united people or we are not. If the former, let us in all matters of general concern act as a nation, which have national objects to promote and a national character to support. If we are not, let us no longer act a farce by pretending to it."
Let's send this to Jill Biden, not Joe, but Jill.
Because?
Well, you would expect this. The media was just fawning over what she had done around the White House, put up these posters with all kinds of, you know, unite and all those types of things. And I'm thinking, now that I read Washington's quote here, I mean, we either are a united people or we are not. And I want to say, Jill, which is it?
Because the things that they are doing, Steve, dividing our country.
Exactly.
And they say unite because they know that that's what people really want. They want to be the United States of America. That's why they take the narrative, but then you have to look at the actions there.
Well, we might get into this in like segment two because there was an excellent situation that arose quite by surprise in Saturday's events with the acquittal of Donald Trump. But that point being made about the way the media reacts to things. Again, they just fawned all over her for this wonderful gesture, which is basically so meaningless.
Yes, and my gosh, and every time Melania Trump decorated the White House for Christmas time, oh my gosh, all they could do was just trash her on that. So my friends, that's why I think Patty's Picks will be a really good idea, because those will be all kinds of different headlines that you can access and read. And we look at these issues, my friends, as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Socialism ultimately comes down to force. And if something is a good idea, you should not have to force people to do that. And when you're talking to your kids and your neighbors, just ask them, is it compassionate to take other people's stuff, their rights and their livelihoods and all of this through policy? And excessive taxation and regulation, is that okay? And the answer should be no on that. First thing, actually, we're going to talk about, I think, impeachment in the next segment. So I'm going to hold that on that. Let's go to the very first headline here. And this is from the Colorado Springs Gazette. It says, the headline is, Senator Bennett's hometown should not become a state. Colorado Senator Michael Bennett loves Washington and represents the city well. If the senator gets his way, Washington will become a state like Colorado, at the expense of Colorado. We cannot create another state without diluting the influence of the other 50. Bennett boldly leads the congressional push to make the District of Columbia a state, and his motive is obvious. Bennett, a loyal Democrat from a Democrat-safe state, we need to change that, wants D.C. voters to elect members of Congress. All will be Democrats, guaranteed. More than 90% of district voters favored Democrats, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and Joe Biden in the last four presidential elections. Republicans comprise 6.1% of Washington's registered voters. Bennett represents Colorado, but Washington is home. He grew up in the district. His father ran the U.S. Agency for International Development under Democrat President Jimmy Carter and worked as an aide to the Democrat Vice President Hubert Humphrey. The senator's grandfather was an economic advisor to the Democrat President FDR, and the senator attended Washington's St. Albans, a fashionable prep school for the children of Washington political elites. Bennett worked as a congressional page. Politicians don't get more Washingtonian than Senator Michael Bennett, and they say there's nothing wrong with that. I don't know about that, Steve. My friends, here we have our senator that will be bringing forth legislation to dilute your vote. And I guess if you're Democrat, you might think that's okay, but I've got to think that when you're looking at what is going on with the Democrat Party right now, Blue Dog Democrats, Libertarians, Republicans, conservatives, we all have to say, really, you want to dilute our vote? I think we're going to need to do something at the ballot box, although I know they think that Colorado is a blue safe state. I'm not so sure on that, Steve.
Oh, this raises so much. Oh, it just, oh, God gets me. All right, the next two lines are very important here. Here's the problem. Washington has for 231 years been a federal enclave devoid of the special interests of statehood. It belongs to no state and lacks the influence of a state. This is not a mistake. It was carefully planned by the founders of the United States. Now, you and I both know his history, and this raises a question now. Was he a plant? How did he become a Colorado state, senator? If with all this glorious history of him living in Washington and D.C. and being exposed to all these different things through his father, his grandfather, and other things, how did he get out here
I don't know the answer to that. I think that he was the superintendent of DPS.
Yes, true.
But I hadn't really thought about that before. That is an excellent
question. Did he have some other markings on him already when he got here?
I think that's a very good question. I think we should do some more research on that. I'm going
to
put...
I'll send it to the research department. Yes, go ahead.
Let's see. The next thing... Oh, I think this is kind of interesting as well. This is from the Denver Post. Colorado Attorney General's office lawyers knew about judicial misconduct memo. Says at least two high-ranking lawyers in the Colorado Attorney General's office were aware of the contents of a memo that enumerated allegations of judicial and official misconduct 2 years before it became public, the Denver Post has learned. But it's not clear if they ever reported the alleged conduct to authorities or their boss. The two attorneys, Leanne Morrell, a first assistant attorney general in charge of its public officials unit, and Grant Sullivan, the AG's assistant solicitor general, were briefed about the memo and its contents by former state court administrator Christopher Ryan at a meeting in July 2019, just as he was about to resign. It says, law professors who teach professional responsibility say the rules of professional conduct are clear that attorneys should disclose judicial improprieties to authorities when they learn of them, but a requirement to maintain client confidentiality might get in the way. And the memo is central to a $2.5 million five-year judicial training contract awarded in April 2019 to the department's chief of staff, Mindy Macias, who Ryan said threatened to file a sex discrimination lawsuit if she were fired over financial irregularities. Macias resigned in March 2019, just weeks before signing the contract, which officially began that June. It was canceled in July 2019 amid a Denver Post investigation into the deal. You talk about cronyism, Steve. Can you believe that? Yes, you can. I know you can.
This show is hurting me now. I can't comprehend.
Okay. Huh?
Well, no, I can't. The answer to your question, no, I can't believe it.
I know.
Now, right. How about what time is it? Can we sneak one more in?
Okay, which one?
How about the Colorado lawmakers possibly getting the COVID-19 vaccine ahead of jumping the line, in other words?
Well, you know how I feel about the COVID-19 vaccine, so that's okay with me.
Okay.
But I think to your point is they think that they're so important that they can jump the line.
Exactly. Uh-huh. What an ego.
Yeah.
Or what egos to say, oh, wait a minute, you know, in the interest of keeping our statehood going or keeping our state business going, we're important enough to do this.
Yeah, and that's something from the Colorado Sun. Yes, the hypocrisy and the lack of humility, the lack of care is just astounding. But, Steve, the blessing in all of this is the veil is off. We know what we're dealing with now. They say unite, but they don't really mean unite. They say they care for the working people, but they don't really care for the working people. The veil is off. The guy that was working for everyday hardworking people actually got acquitted this weekend. Let's talk about that when we come back.
Okay,
before we do that, though, one of the great partners of the Kim Munson Show is Hooters Restaurants, and they have five locations located right here in the metro area. That's Loveland, Colorado Springs, Lone Tree, Westminster, and Loveland. And they have all kinds of specials. You can go to my website, kimmunson.com, to find all those. They have to-go-only specials. They've got Kids Eat Free. Kids Eat Free on Saturdays, happy hour, lunch specials. Check all that out. And again, that is at my website, kimmunson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the impeachment, the acquittal, which is a not guilty verdict on this. And stay tuned.
With the federal government printing money, it looks like inflation is on the horizon. That is why you should lock in a low rate now on your mortgage. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group is here to help. Lauren works with a variety of lenders to assist you in finding the mortgage that is just right for you. Locking in a low rate now will save you thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. Don't procrastinate. Don't wait any longer. Call Lauren today at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. It's been a very interesting week, culminating on Saturday with the vote to acquit Donald Trump of this impeachment. So he has been acquitted twice on impeachment, and acquit means not guilty. And there was a piece in The Federalist by Gabe Kaminsky. He said, it's been one terrible, horrible, no good, very bad week for the Democrat Party. Impeachment for political theater was squashed. The Never Trump Lincoln Project further imploded when it was reported its leaders knew about the sexual harassment allegations against co-founder John Weaver. And the petition to recall California Governor Gavin Newsom, Democrat California, reached 1.5 million signatures, likely to trigger a special election.
You love to say the veil is off, but here's classic. Those five or six things that he mentions, people are looking at this and saying, what in the world is going on?
And the veil is off, and we need to continue to push forward with truth and clarity. Now, there was a piece in the Epoch Times, Trump's impeachment lawyer. He said the bloodthirsty media is trying to divide this country. And this is the lawyer, Vanderveen. He said, prosecutors in this case doctored evidence. They did not investigate this case, and when they had to come to the court of the Senate to put their case on because they had not done any investigation, they doctored evidence. It was absolutely shocking. I think when we discovered it and were able to expose it and put it out, I think it turned a lot of senators, Vanderveen said. And the other thing, Reggie, I'm a Trumpster, I'm a super PAC, Reggie Carr and I were talking this weekend, and they, on Saturday, it was odd. They said that they were going to allow or subpoena evidence. And I thought, well, that's weird. Shouldn't evidence that have been presented over, you know, in the House and witnesses over in the House? And then what they did, Steve, is they allowed one piece of evidence, I guess it is, to be read into the record, and it was a statement that one of the Never Trumpers in the House, now I can't remember her name, Herrera, I think was her last name, that she had actually issued on January 12th, and just basically it was the Democrat narrative. They let that be read into the record. It was hearsay on what Representative McCarthy said, and they let that be read into the record, and then no other witnesses were called. I found that absolutely, that's what it was, witnesses is what I wanted to say. I found that absolutely astounding, Steve.
Well, I wonder if they didn't pave the way to their own destruction here in terms of the overall effort. You know, it just cut them, they cut themselves off at the knees.
Yeah, it was really interesting. You said that you've got a soundbite that we should go through.
Well, you basically already read it. I went in. This was a made-for-TV moment. Now, the lawyer was Michael Vanderveen on Trump's team, and this was
let's go through
video,
it again.
Video from CBSN, The Weeknd. Now, obviously, I don't think they had, you know, it's The Weeknd, so their star reporter or anchor wasn't on. This is a young lady by the name of Lana Zack. And I think she really stepped into it when she got this Trump lawyer on for a live interview, and he just took over. So yeah, here's a couple pieces of it. We'll kind of progress through it.
What happened at the Capitol on January 6th is absolutely horrific. But what happened at the Capitol during this trial was not too far away from that. The prosecutors in this case doctored evidence. They did not investigate this case, and when they had to come to the court of the Senate to put their case on, because they hadn't done any investigation, they doctored evidence. It was absolutely shocking, I think, when we discovered it and we were able to expose it and put it out. I think it turned a lot of senators. The American people should not be putting up with this. They need to look at who who these house managers were and look to see whether these are the folks they want representing them. It was shocking to me.
Now, so far so good. But now she's gonna create her own demise here. She's gonna go out on a limb and he's gonna saw it off.
Let's follow up with a point that you're making right now about the House managers, as you say, doctoring evidence and the argument.
They didn't deny it.
To be clear for our viewers, what you're talking about now is a check mark that's a verification on Twitter that did not exist on that particular tweet, a 2020 that should have actually read 2021, and the selective editing, you say, of the tapes. Is that the doctored evidence of what you're speaking?
That's not enough for you? No.
I am not a juror in this trial. What I'm trying to be clear for our viewers.
Wow.
Now, she's going to try and say, oh, for the sake of the viewers. She realizes now that she's really opened up a Pandora's box or a can of worms, whatever. And for the interest of the time, I'll play the very last portion of it, because he basically sets it straight, tells us what the media is really doing.
Not everybody has been following.
It's not okay to doctor a little bit of evidence respectfully.
I have not said it is okay.
Ma'am, your question is
I want
turned.
To be clear for our viewers.
Listen.
Wow. Now,
here's where he sets it straight.
What
I
has
want to be
to
clear for our viewers
the,
about
the
what exactly you're saying
start,
when you say doctored evidence.
The media has to start telling the right story in this country. The media is trying to divide this country. You are bloodthirsty for ratings. And as such, you're asking questions now that are already set up with a fact pattern. I can't believe you would ask me a question indicating that it's all right just to doctor a little bit of evidence. There's more stuff that we uncovered that they doctored.
So that's, you get the idea. But I think this young lady, this Lana Zack, really, she probably went to her dressing room and had a total breakdown.
You know, the thing about it, though, Steve, is look at the way she was trying to talk over him, to ask the question, and then when he was giving an answer, she didn't like the answer, then she was talking over him. We've seen this time and time again with these young, and it seems like it's a lot of these young women reporters that are trying to, you know, climb the ladder, and they've seen this behavior before. We saw this during the debates between Trump and Biden, and it seems to be kind of an MO, a badge of honor, although I would say that, yes, he did school her on this.
Oh, absolutely. The narrative, that's our favorite buzzword. Mm-hmm. She realized he was going to get the upper hand, and she was doing the best she could to try to get it back from him, and he wasn't having it.
Yeah. One other headline that I saw this weekend, I don't think it's on here, that his home was actually vandalized. You know, and that they try to scare people, and they are trying to shut down voices. And my friends, when we are in a country like this, where bullies are trying to shut down voices, shut down free speech, shut down freedom of religion, shut down freedom of assembly, shut down freedom of thought, then that is a time that we come together and we have to stand against this kind of bullying. I wanted to mention one other thing, and this is from the New York Post. Police, this was in Manhattan this weekend. Police arrested 11 people, one who allegedly bit a cop's leg, when an anti-cop protest turned violent in Manhattan, authorities said Saturday. About 100 people converged on Midtown for Friday night's Defund the Police demonstration organized by Black Lives Matter. Six women and four men were charged with disorderly conduct, obstructing governmental administration, unlawful assembly, and assault. The 10 were given desk appearance tickets and released. Okay, we just did this little exercise last week, and that is, if you go to Black Lives Matter and you click on contribute, it goes to Act Blue, which is the big fundraising arm for the Democrat Party. My friends, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that there are those out there that are trying to, if, by defunding the police. I mean, if I were a mom in an inner city and in New York and one of the boroughs, and seeing all the crime that's going on, I know that these moms, these families out there, they want police protection. And so here everybody was so up in arms with what happened at the Capitol January 6th. Where's the outrage now by the Democrats on what happened in Manhattan on Saturday?
Well, okay, the root of all this, like this event in, was it New York City, you said?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go back to Minneapolis, where this basically started after George Floyd's demise. Minneapolis' push to defund police backfires after residents complain of slow response times and an increase in crime. The city council on Friday voted unanimously to approve $6.4 million in additional funding for the police department.
Well, and they're having a heck of a time recruiting in these cities where the where police officers do not feel that they have the support of city council and the mayor. And so you're seeing a number of police officers that if they're getting close to retirement, they are retiring and then recruiting, trying to recruit to these cities where the police are not respected. Is a very difficult thing. And then and people wonder, why are we having longer response times when we call 911? Again, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that they're all connected. So let's just connect this dot one more time. Black Lives Matter, this weekend in Manhattan, had it turned into a riot. And they actually, let's see, two cops were injured, 11 were arrested, and then they let them out. Okay, then they let them out, and this was Black Lives Matter. And then if you go to Black Lives Matter and you click on Contribute, it goes to Act Blue, which is the big fundraising arm for the Democrat Party. So, my friends, we need to wake up. As far as the far left that has taken over the Democrat Party, this is no longer the party of JFK. This is no longer the party of, they say that they're of the people. This is the elites, and they're globalists. And whether or not you're Blue Dog Democrat, Libertarian, Republican, Conservative, we need to be standing up in this battle of ideas and engaging with our friends and our family and our colleagues about this.
Can I read you a quote, and then you tell me who it is who's speaking?
Sure.
It's a sad commentary on our times when one political party in America is given a free pass to degenerate or to denigrate the rule of law, defame law enforcement, cheer mobs, excuse rioters, and transform justice into a tool of political vengeance, and persecute, blacklist, cancel, and suppress all people and viewpoints with whom or which they disagree. Who said that?
I don't know.
President Donald Trump? And he just said it this past weekend after the...
In his speech?
Right.
Or his comments?
Yes.
Very good. Okay. Hey, let's go to break because we've got a great treat planned for you with Dr. Alan Gelzo. And we're going to be talking about two great presidents, and that is George Washington and Abraham Lincoln. Before we do that, though, just a shout out to Jason McBride, Senior VP with Presidential Wealth Management. The markets are closed today, and so we gave him the day off, Steve.
We're so good.
But would recommend you reach out to Jason, 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. Do a portfolio check with him, and we're going to go to break. We'll be right back with Dr. Alan Gelzo.
Home ownership and private property rights help you build wealth for you and your family. RE/MAX Alliance award-winning realtor Karen Levine understands this. Supply is super tight right now. This is why you need a seasoned professional with excellent negotiating skills on your side of the table, whether buying or selling an existing home or buying a new build. As a member of the National Association of Realtors Board of Directors, Karen Levine volunteers hours of her time to help you build your American dream. Call her today at 303-877-7516. Again, that's 303-877-7516.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
And And welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MUNSON.com. Sign up for our newsletter there. You'll get it once a week. And it has all the upcoming guests as well as our most recent op-eds and podcasts. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. I am so excited to have on the line with me Dr. Alan Gelzo. He is a senior research scholar in the Council of the Humanities at Princeton University and director of the James Madison Program's Initiative in Politics and Statesmanship. Dr. Alan Gelzo, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. It's good to be back, Kim. I hope the weather is, well, I hope it's a little warmer than it is here in Pennsylvania, but my guess is that it probably isn't.
You know, it's a -8 here this morning. How's that global warming working out for you, Dr. Alan Gelzo?
Well, I'd say that our part of the globe is probably just a tad warmer than yours.
Okay.
But either way, it's still winter.
It is still winter. It is President's Day, where we honor two great presidents, George Washington, the father of our country, really, and then Abraham Lincoln, who once again went back to our founding. And so this first segment, let's talk about George Washington. You are an expert in, you know, these great men. So what's your thoughts about George Washington?
Oh, George Washington, he is, I think it's safe to say, the indispensable man. We would not have a country. We would not have the United States of America without George Washington. And people in his own day recognized that. He was the linchpin on which both the Revolution turned. There could not have been a successful American Revolution without Washington's leadership, without his constancy. And at the same time, there couldn't have been a United States without the political Washington, the man who stepped in to become the president of the United States under the new Constitution, who served two terms as our first president, and who imparted to this new governing document, the Constitution, a stability that it's really hard to see that anyone else in his generation could have given to it. Just on those terms alone, he is, as I said, the indispensable man. But he's indispensable when we look at him in some very specific ways, too. There are some moments, Kim, with Washington that are just moments when he has a kind of historical halo around him. And I don't mean to deify an ordinary human being, but there are moments with Washington that really cannot be easily washed away unless you're really doing something terrible. When Washington led his men across the Delaware in December of 1776 to launch their surprise attack at Trenton, they were successful. It caught the British, especially the Hessian garrison there, entirely by surprise. But it also meant that they'd almost run out their own gambit as Americans, because the enlistments of the army that had won that victory at Trenton were about to expire on December 31st. And all the elation of victory that they enjoyed from Trenton was going to chill in the snow and the ice. So what he did, he paraded the divisions of Greene and Sullivan. I mean, these were men who had fought at Long Island, at Harlem, at White Plains earlier that year, and lost. These were men whose regiments had just dwindled away during the defeats and the gloom of the retreat across New Jersey. Well, he parades them to make a personal appeal. And he, as one of them said, he entreated us to stay. And the drums rolled, and nobody stepped forward to volunteer. They all wanted to go home. Well, Washington rode down, up and down the lines of his men, wheeled his horse around, and he made a little speech. Now, Washington never was a man who had any kind of special gift for words. His letters, his reports are always straightforward. They're always unadorned. No literary turns, no elegance. He was a soldier. But he says to them words that really moved them. He says, "My brave fellows, you have done all I asked you to do, and more than could be reasonably expected. But your country is at stake, your wives, your houses, and all that you hold dear. You have worn yourselves out with fatigues and hardships, and we know not how to spare you. If you will consent to stay 1 month longer, you will render that service to the cause of liberty and to your country, which you probably can never do under any other circumstances. And he says this, and the men in the ranks begin to waver. They begin to argue out loud with each other, even as they stood there shivering in the cold, making bargains with each other. I'll stay if you stay. And finally, somebody bawls out, we cannot go home under such circumstances. And so you see it happen by ones and twos, then by companies. They step forward until 1,200 men, almost the entire strength of these two divisions, stood there. And one of Washington's officers bundled up to him and said, should we get them to sign something? In other words, let's get this in print while we still can. And Washington replies, men who will volunteer in such a case as this need no enrollment to keep them to their duty. It is a marvelous moment.
Oh, my gosh.
He not only moves them, but he pays a tribute to them. Kim, there's a second moment this way. And this is, the revolution is effectively over at this point. The victory at Yorktown has taken place. There was a preliminary treaty signed in November of 1782. Well, that treaty was a signal to the Congress to begin demobilizing Washington's army without paying any attention to whether they'd been paid or whether the officers were going to get the pensions that Washington had demanded that they be paid during the Valley Forge winter. So in March of 1783, Washington has to call a meeting of his officers at Newburgh, New York, because he's picked up rumors of whiffs of mutiny, that they're going to go stage some kind of demonstration to teach the Continental Congress a lesson. They're going to march on Philadelphia, where the Congress is sitting, and install him as the king. Well, he gets his officers together at Newburgh, and he gives them the sternest lecture of his life against what he calls this dreadful alternative of either deserting our country in the extremest hour of distress or turning your arms against it. He said that has something so shocking in it that humanity revolts at the idea. And then after he scolds them, he proceeds to read a letter. He's got a letter from a sympathetic member of Congress trying to assure them of Congress's good intentions. And the letter was written in this really spidery hand. I've seen this letter, and it's not easy to read. And Washington couldn't read it unaided, so he fumbles for a moment in his coat for a pair of eyeglasses. Gentlemen, he apologized, you must pardon me. I have grown gray in your service, and now find myself growing blind. And with that one miraculous sentence, the wind just goes out of any conspiracy on the part of his officers. How could they? How could they? And it's after that, of course, when the peace treaty finally is signed, that he has this emotional farewell dinner with his officers at Francis Tavern in New York City. And he rides south to Annapolis, where the Congress is then in session. He surrenders his commission and goes home to Mount Vernon. Just goes home. He resigns his commission. Makes no effort to seize power. You know something? Not even King George III could withhold a measure of admiration. When the king heard that Washington had voluntarily laid down his commission, had returned to just ordinary private life at Mount Vernon, the king, who as a king had no reason to believe that anybody would ever willingly relinquish the kind of power that Washington had acquired, the king marveled. And the king said, then he must be the greatest man of the age. And so he was. That was Washington, and that was why he was the indispensable man. Without Washington, we would not be here today.
Well, and now they're taking, in San Francisco, they're taking his name off of schools. It's unbelievable. These stories are, I had not heard the first one. I was familiar with the others, but oh, those are awesome, Dr. Alan Gelsel. Let's go to break, though, because we want to honor the other great president for a President's Day, and that is Abraham Lincoln. And George Washington was born in 1732, February 22nd, 1732. And so let's go to break. Before we do that, though, Castlegate Knife and Tool is one of the reasons that you get to hear this independent voice every Monday through Friday. And Castlegate Knife and Tool is located right in Sedalia, Colorado. Family owned, they have knives from the best blade makers from throughout the world. So whether or not you're a sportsman or a chef or a collector, you want that very special knife, Castlegate Knife and Tool is the place for you. We're going to go to break. We'll continue our conversation with Dr. Alan Gelsel regarding Abraham Lincoln.
Controlling your own destiny. There are a lot of unknowns on the horizon with the new administration. Predovich & Company is here to help. Trusted professionals for all your bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting needs. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. They've been helping her for years. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company works with clients from anywhere in the United States. Give them a call at 303-791-3000 to put Predovich & Company to work for you. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Would you have ever dreamed that freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of assembly, and freedom of religion would be under assault and attack in America? Unbelievably, it is happening right before our eyes. That is why it is important to keep free-thinking, independent voices on the airwaves, the internet, and social media. Kim Munson is one of those important voices. Help her keep independence alive. Go to KimMunson.com to contribute, to join Kim in the battle of ideas raging in America today. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I'm Kim Munson. Check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. And you can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. On the line with me is Dr. Alan Gelsel, Senior Research Scholar in the Council of the Humanities at Princeton University and Director of the James Madison Program's Initiative in Politics and Statesmanship. And I'll tell you, Dr. Gelsel, I had tears in my eyes during that last segment with what you were sharing regarding George Washington and this other great president, Abraham Lincoln, who was born February 12, 1809. I know that you have extensive stories you can share about him. What do you want to have our listeners know about him this morning?
Well, about Lincoln, that he too was an indispensable man. He was our second Washington. When you consider the crisis that he faced, civil war, American versus American, section versus section, state against state, tearing the country apart, and doing it at a moment in world history when the consequences of it would have been simply unfathomable. Think for a moment, Kim. In 1776, when we declared our independence, we created a republic. It was the first large-scale republic in human history. We were dedicated to this principle, all men are created equal. And it seemed then that we were the beginning of a new movement. We were, as our motto said, we were a novus ordo seclorum, a new order in the heavens. But then came the French Revolution. And the French Revolution was a hideous botch. And after that were other attempts at revolution, and they were botches. And then there was the restoration of monarchy at the Congress of Vienna in 1815, at the suppression of every attempt at democratic revolution between that and 1860, until by 1860 the United States was the only large-scale free republic left in the world. And here we were going to blow our own brains out in a civil war. What kind of a challenge was that? And the previous presidents who had sat in the presidential chair were no encouragement that we were going to be able to rise to the occasion. I mean, what had we had in the 1850s? Millard Fillmore. Boy, there's a memorable name in the presidents. Franklin Pierce. James Buchanan. Oh, yes, they're men to really lead us up to the mountaintop. More like men to lead us to bankruptcy. And then we get Lincoln, this totally unprecedented character who'd had next to nothing in the way of national experience and really didn't have a whole lot in the way of what you might call governing experience at home, apart from four terms in the state legislature. He'd never been the governor of Illinois. He'd never even been the mayor of his own hometown. And now he's the president of the United States. And no one can really believe that this man, who seems to have come from nowhere, can really accomplish anything. One newspaper editor said, "Who will write this ignorant man's state papers for him?"
Hmm.
Oh,
wow.
How wrong they were. One of Lincoln's legal associates, Leonard Swett, once said about Lincoln, and I think it's the truest thing ever said about him, "Anyone who ever took Abe Lincoln for a simple-minded man would wake up with his back in a ditch." And there were an awful lot of people who woke up with their backs in ditches during his presidency. No, he saw from the very beginning exactly what needed to be done, and he hewed to that line of the restoration of the Union and the elimination of what had almost destroyed that Union, slavery, consistently from the day he took office until the day he was murdered. And he did it not only with the strength and the firmness of purpose that we can expect from a man who grew up splitting rails and logs. He did it with an elegance and an eloquence that were almost entirely acquired by himself on his own hook.
Mm-hmm.
And he did it without rage and fury. He once wrote in a letter in 1862, he's dealing with a truculent, uncooperative person. And this person's arguing about all the things that Lincoln's government should not do to restore the Union. And he gets impatient and he says, if people won't do what has to be done, if they prefer to hazard all for the sake of destroying the government, then it's for them to consider whether it is probable I will surrender the government to save them from losing all. And yet he says, I am in no boastful mood. I shall not do more than I can, and I shall do all that I can to save the government, which is my sworn duty, but I shall do nothing in malice. What I deal with is too vast for malicious dealing. There is this remarkable combination in Lincoln of strength and gentleness, of vigor and mercy at the same time. In his first inaugural, this man who had never had more than a year's worth of formal schooling closes with such eloquence. He says at the end of his first inaugural, "We are not enemies, but friends. We must not be enemies." These are good words for us today, Kim.
Mm-hmm.
He says, "Though passion may have strained, it must not break our bonds of affection. The mystic cords of memory, stretching from every battlefield and patriot grave to every living heart and hearthstone over all this broad land, will yet swell the chorus of the Union, when again touched, as surely they will be, by the better angels of our nature." He's quoting Shakespeare there at the end. He appeals to those better angels 4 years later in his second inaugural, when he talks about how he wants to bring an end to this terrible war, but to do it with malice toward none, with charity for all, with firmness in the right as God gives us to see the right, to do all which may achieve and cherish a just and a lasting peace among ourselves and with all nations. What eloquence! Has anything ever matched the power of Lincoln's words among people in American political life? I don't think so. You know, it's true. And people are quick to tell us this today. Both Lincoln and Washington had their faults. Washington owned slaves. Lincoln, and this is something which is in the Western states, a matter of some interest to people who are critical of Lincoln, he signed the death warrants for dozens of Sioux warriors after the Sioux uprising in Minnesota in 1862. Many of those matters for which we hold them to fault today were actually not considered serious or even faults in their time. And holding Lincoln and Washington to account for them is a little like complaining that Lincoln and Washington didn't know how to use electricity and weren't on the internet and social media. I am, as a history person, always in favor of remembering. And I never lose any opportunity to get on a soapbox and talk to people about the importance of learning and teaching and remembering American history. But you know, there's also something to be said for forgetting. Now, when I say forgetting, I don't mean erasure from memory. What I mean is setting things in a certain order and understanding that there's a hierarchy of what's to be remembered first and other things to be less remembered. There are strengths that these men, Lincoln and Washington, had, which we need and need so badly today. And the weaknesses that they had are not weaknesses that are different from any of the weaknesses that we have today. I don't want to erase those weaknesses, but I do want to put them at a lower level, because what we really need are the great strengths that they had and which we too often today lack. So I look to those strengths. I look to a Lincoln. I look to a Washington. And I know that we all have a darkening hill to climb in the crises of our times. But at that time, at that moment, we look to a Lincoln and Washington, and we look beyond horizons to see those strengths and to be guided by them. And that, I think, is what we need today.
Dr. Gelzo, what has happened as we're talking about Washington and Lincoln is because they were humans and they did have their faults, that has really been what many modern-day multiculturalists have focused on, and not even acknowledging these strengths that these men had, nor the founding fathers, what they had, what they have given to us. And it's been this effort to discount them and discount the contributions that have made the great American experiment. And as you were talking about that, I realized that they have almost wanted to erase the great accomplishments of these men. We've got it maybe about 3 minutes, Dr. Alan Gelzo. What's some of the final thoughts that you'd like to leave with our listeners?
I'd like to appeal in cases like that to what I suppose we could call a higher authority. Let those who are without sin cast the first stone. Let those who want to topple the statues of the past reflect on what another generation or two generations may have to say about them. Because we are focused on our own times. And in our own times, we can only imagine that we know everything that needs to be known and that we have all the answers. But if there is any single obvious lesson that history should teach us, I mean, entirely apart from all the details of dates, names, and places, the lesson is that your time is always a limited time. Your scope is always a limited scope. You do not know everything. And you will be judged by later generations. How well do you want to be judged by that? How searchingly do you want to be judged by the future? If you want to be judged decently by the future, and who does not want to be, then judge decently by the past. While you are the present, remember that the future will find things about you that you didn't think were wrong, but which it may find to be criminal. In that case, do what you do without malice, because what we are dealing with, as Lincoln said, is too great for malice.
Well, with those words, we indeed stand on the shoulders of giants. And this great American experiment is important to fight for in this battle of ideas, as these men did. And Dr. Alan Gelzo, it is always such a rich conversation when you're on the show. I so greatly appreciate the conversation. Thank you for joining us today.
You're very welcome, Kim. It's always good to talk.
Okay. And yes, Dr. Alan Gelzo, he is the Senior Research Scholar in the Council of the Humanities at Princeton University and Director of the James Madison Programs Initiative in Politics and Statesmanship. And I actually had tears in my eyes when he was talking about George Washington. And just a very appropriate conversations today, which is President's Day, honoring these two great men. And so our quote for the end of the show is from Abraham Lincoln. He was born in 1809. He died in 1865. And this is what he said: "I do the very best I know how, the very best I can, and I mean to keep doing so until the end." So my friends, today be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. My friends, you are not alone. God bless you, and God bless America.
Like a new moon rising, fierce through the rain and lightning, wandering out into this great unknown.